Welcome to What Matters Now, the Times of Israel's weekly podcast. I'm Amir Borshel-Dan, here for an informal conversation with our Times of Israel senior analyst, Chaviv Retegur. Chaviv, welcome to my home again.
Amanda, it's wonderful to be here. Let's have at it.
Chaviv, you're a person who is very used to people disagreeing with him, but I'm kind of more used to people picking on how I say things, not the content of what I said.
In their defense, that half Canadian, half Indiana accent is problematic.
With my Israeli resh as well.
So yes.
Throw that all in. But in the Senate floor speech last week, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer branded our Prime Minister, Prime Minister Netanyahu, as one of the four obstacles to peace, along with Hamas, the Israeli far right, and Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas. And in our The Times of Israel Daily Briefing podcast, I mentioned how looking at things from here, while America is experiencing an unprecedented level of anti-Semitism, having a Jew put the head of the Jewish state along with all of these other more questionable figures is potentially problematic in my mind. However, many of our readers wrote back and they 100%, many of them, agreed with what Schumer said. And I just want to quote one of the letters. From the American Jewish point of view, Netanyahu is the problem. His years in power incrementally disenfranchising Arab Israeli rights and pushing Palestinians out of the West Bank is the problem. And his multiple conflicts of interest are completely problematic, if for no other reason than his very ability to negotiate with Hamas is hamstrung by an existential need to hold together a political coalition. Now, Chaviv, I don't think many Israelis would disagree with this American self-proclaimed liberal writer. Would you agree with that?
I have to say, you know, I don't think Israelis blame Netanyahu for the peace process not moving forward, if only because they, by huge majorities, blame all the, you know, catalysts for massive waves of terrorism every time the peace process was underway. I don't think they see Netanyahu as the obstacle. I don't think the majority of them see Netanyahu as the obstacle to a bunch of the things that were mentioned by that specific person. But each Israeli, wherever they are on the political spectrum, does see Netanyahu as the obstacle to whatever they think is the better future going forward. There is profound distrust of Netanyahu, and it is profound and deep and goes deep into the political right and into Netanyahu's own electoral base, or at least the people who voted for him back in November 2022. And we have polls on that. There's the latest Hebrew University Omnibus poll, which you and I have been talking about. I'll just say 2 points on that specifically from the poll. There's the question of dissatisfaction with the progress of the war. Dissatisfaction with the progress of the war is at 50%, and satisfaction with the progress of the war is only at 10%. 40% are unsure, which to me is dissatisfied. Now, that's a statement of trust in the government and the government's policy. And one of the ways that I know that that's a question about Netanyahu is that the poll, the Hebrew University pollsters actually asked, holding Netanyahu largely or solely responsible for the October 7 attack. That was the question. Do you think he's largely or solely responsible? Solely responsible for October 7, 30% of the Israeli population. Largely responsible for October 7, another 39%. That is 69%. He is solely or largely responsible. And then you have moderately responsible is another 14, and to a small extent responsible 11. And the people who think he's not at all responsible for October 7 is just 6%. And so Netanyahu is seen by Israelis, A, as not delivering the war they want, and B, profoundly responsible for October 7, the man who led the country, the man who led the policy that gave us October 7. And we have all these other metrics of distrust that cut, again, it cuts from deep left all the way into the right. It's Arabs, it's Jews. In that sense, there is a profound sense among Israelis that Netanyahu is part of the problem, and it's affecting how they understand the progress of the war at this point.
Now, I just want to drill down into what you just said. That Hebrew University poll was conducted by Nimrod Nir, and it's a survey of 1,774 Jewish Israeli adults from different demographics, so different walks of life. And what's interesting is that the numbers have shifted somewhat since the beginning of the war until now. The numbers that you cited are now numbers, but it's gone from between 16% to 34% that said that our prime minister is the sole culprit, and between 56% to 39% to a large extent. So the numbers have been even greater over the span of time. And another question that Nimrod Nir asked was, which institution is most responsible? The government, the IDF, the Supreme Court, other? And it's really interesting to see that over the span of time, 51 to 42% of the Israelis, Jewish Israelis polled said the government, it's now 42%, whereas 34% to 43% said the IDF, it's now at 41%. So right now, according to the last poll, which is the beginning of March, it's almost neck and neck that the government and the IDF is most responsible for October 7th.
Right. And just to clarify, those are two questions that there is a huge number. I mean, a double digit percentage of Israelis who say Netanyahu is entirely or mostly responsible, but that the IDF is the single institution most responsible. And the reason is that when you dig into the actual questions, it becomes clear that people are saying the policy of Netanyahu led there. The army should have been able to stop it on day one, right? So they're responding to different, I would maybe kinds or parts of a larger question. So the distrust in the army is profound. But right now we have polls of just literally, do you trust the army to protect the country? And the army is right now one of the most trusted institutions in the country. It is blamed for its failures on October 7, as it manifestly should be. It's the army. But it isn't distrusted in terms of going forward to the future. And that is not true of the prime minister.
Right. Another of the questions that actually made me somewhat chuckle, ironically, is the prime minister motivated by political considerations during this war? And that number has stayed at around 60% since October 7th until now, meaning the Israeli public pretty much knows what package they're getting with this prime minister, which kind of leads to the next question about elections, which of course Chuck Schumer was stressing in his speech. Instead of stepping down entirely, saying that Bibi should step down entirely, which apparently initially Schumer wanted to say, which he told the New York Times in an article this week, instead Schumer said that as the war winds down, Israel should go to elections. Chaviv.
I don't have much to say about Schumer. A lot of people thought this was a very dramatic event. I didn't think it was a dramatic event. I'm uninterested in it. Was he speaking for the Biden administration? Probably. He's not a senator who's very involved in foreign policy. He is a big supporter of Israel, like most American Jews, and as we've seen, like most Israelis, including, I have to emphasize, on the right, among Netanyahu's own voters, huge numbers think that, A, he is worried about politics more than about the war and the national interest, and B, they just don't trust him to run the place. They don't trust him to run the war. And so Schumer saying something that I do think that, as your letter writer said, is shared by, I think, most American Jews. The person who wrote that letter said that's most progressive Jews, but I know a lot of non-progressive Jews who also think that about Netanyahu. So we have a person in power who is profoundly distrusted by the diaspora and profoundly distrusted by Israelis. There isn't, just in terms of parliamentary procedure, an easy way to kick him out. If there were an election right now, he would fall. There isn't an election right now. In Israel, we're a parliamentary system with a no-confidence mechanism where a parliament can vote no confidence in a government and topple it. But A, the majority of this parliament is the coalition by definition, and they are pulling badly. And so why would they topple a government and potentially go to elections when they themselves would shrink? And B, the only way you can replace a government with another government in the Israeli system without going to elections, as we've seen in the British system, between elections they can have four prime ministers, is to elect a prime minister. We have something called a constructive no-confidence system, which means that you can topple the government in a no-confidence vote in parliament only if in that same vote you elect a different government with a different prime minister from the same parliament. The parliamentary math doesn't allow for that. The Netanyahu coalition totally dependent on the furthest of far-right parties in the Israeli politics, remains in power, and there is no easy mechanism for removing them. Just one last sentence about the schedule. I think in the spring of 2025, this government has to pass a budget or the Knesset dissolves. If they fail to do that, they dissolve into elections, and that election would be in the summer of 2025 at the soonest. And then we're talking about, I believe, November 2026 when the term ends. So those are the schedules we're looking at. Netanyahu doesn't fall automatically. And so what is Schumer asking for exactly? He's asking for the Netanyahu coalition that's polling disastrously to vote itself out of office by voting for an election right now. It's politically a little bit silly. If the Biden administration is hoping that the one way you might conceivably have an election early is protests, we have seen the hostage families protest because they don't trust this government. Specifically, they don't trust Netanyahu to really be negotiating in good faith to get their people out, but rather to be hostage to his right-wing politics. I mean, to the far-right politics, not even to his own opinions. That's a distrust that is driving those protests. Those protests have hit maybe 100,000 people in Tel Aviv. That is not the protests of the victims, which are 10 times as many in number as the hostages, and everyone they know and everyone who supports them. That's not the protests of the displaced, which are 100 times the number, or 50 times the number of the hostages and everyone who knows them. We could conceivably see, once Israeli public, with these deep distrust numbers, starts to think that the war is over, that mass protests are not a violation of the trust and unity of those soldiers in the fight, we could conceivably see million or million and a half strong protests from deep left to quite far into the right. And that's not something this government, I think, could survive. Other than that kind of scenario, I don't know how Netanyahu leaves. Netanyahu is not a politician who will leave of his own accord.
Oh, for sure. And in fact, the numbers are borne out from this omnibus of data that we're presenting as well. In terms of how many Israelis believe that our prime minister should resign right now, it's between 22 and 30% throughout the war, now around 29%. How many believe it should be as the war winds down, like what Schumer suggested? That's 19 to 11%, right now around 19%. After the end of the war, 20 to 35%, and now it's around 20. So the other two numbers, the after intense fighting and the right now numbers, have actually grown over the course of the war instead of the after the end of the war. So that again signals the dissatisfaction that the Israeli public has with the prime minister.
So just to clarify, 29% resigned immediately, 19 at the end of intense fighting, meaning it's about the soldiers, and 20 immediately after the war. That's 68% of Israelis do not want Netanyahu in power when things quiet down.
Exactly. So that is, again, in line with what our letter writer is expressing as the American Jewish opinion. However, the question is more, I think, one of nuance. And the Israeli public may not want Benjamin Netanyahu to be steering the ship, but they think the ship still needs to be steered and that it is a warship. The war should go on, according to the vast majority of Israelis.
This is a point that Netanyahu has been making in interviews in America. He hasn't said Israelis want me, because he can't. But what he has said is, the Biden administration is criticizing my policies, but my policies are the policies of the vast majority of Israelis. And he's absolutely right. And it's important to say, Israelis are very, very hawkish. And they're hawkish on a few things. And one really good example, one really, I think, you know, important example is the question, for example, of aid. So when you ask Israelis, do you think that humanitarian aid should be provided or increased, 51% do not want an increase in humanitarian aid to Gaza. This is framed in Israeli right-wing discourse. This is, of course, heavily weighted toward Netanyahu's voters and voters for the coalition and right, self-identified right-wingers. It's framed as a hostage issue. As long as Hamas holds our hostage, as long as they feel, I'm not saying this is the right or correct or frankly what Israeli law says, but this is what they feel. As long as the other side doesn't think humanitarian law or humanitarian morality is relevant, we shouldn't either. And that's 51% of Israelis. 27% want to see humanitarian aid go in. And there's this huge 22% in the middle who don't know. Now, a few really important and interesting things to say about this number. One, the number who oppose humanitarian aid is dropping. It's dropping quite significantly from February 25th to March 3rd. What is that? 7 days? It dropped 5 points. It had already dropped 2 points in the previous week. So it is dropping. However, these people are going from the no to the I don't know section. I think that it's important to understand, and I say this from huge numbers of conversations with Israelis, anecdotal conversations, I don't have data on this. So I can't, you know, stand on a pile of statistics. But a great deal of the Israeli hawkish responses right now are a response to two things. First of all, they don't believe the narrative coming out of Gaza and coming out of the international humanitarian aid organizations that there's starvation in Gaza. They don't believe it for a few reasons. One, the army says otherwise. Israelis trust the army more than almost any other institution, certainly more than foreign organizations. Two, there isn't a death toll. In other words, the words that the international community has used about Gaza have been words that require a death toll to be true. Mass famine and starvation, and nobody has died. Or I think there's an AP article with a number that named 20 potential deaths from, in a 2 million population, how do you single them out as famine deaths? And where's the data from? And is it all Hamas? We haven't seen a death toll from starvation. That does not mean that Gazans aren't in danger. Food insecurity is definitely at extremely high levels. That's not the same as starvation. There are also very different levels in very different parts of Gaza. So it's ironically in parts of Gaza where you have million people, you know, as refugees in southern Gaza, it's relatively easy to get them aid. And we've even seen markets and we see people getting aid. Pockets in other places in northern Gaza and elsewhere, where aid distribution is very difficult, hampered by local gangs, hampered in every case by Hamas, hampered in for all kinds of different reasons, there you actually have a real danger of starvation. I happen to believe that that we're reaching a tipping point where humanitarian aid is going to become something absolutely necessary, and the level of suffering is going beyond refugees sitting out a terrible war, which is a terrible, disastrous, horrible thing that needs massive aid. And I have been publicly and angrily and in Hebrew complaining about the Israeli government's very slow response, which I think is due to incompetence rather than malice. I really, truly don't think the Israeli government understood how well the war would go, how quickly the war would go. I don't share the view of half of Israelis that the war has gone poorly in military terms. And so actually, they didn't think about the day after. In many ways, the day after is already here. We had a whole podcast about that. But the main point is that we have to start now ramping up aid massively, because there is going to be hunger at a level that is absolutely not allowed, by international law, but even more important for me, by Israeli law, by morality. As Israelis begin to suspect that the situation in Gaza actually is growing worse, they are beginning to shift on this. And I think that's a very good thing, and I think it needs to happen much faster. But I think also the political leadership, Netanyahu needs to stop looking at the damn polls. Netanyahu needs to start acting. Because if Gazans do starve to death, then very little else that Israel ever says to itself, never mind to the world, will matter. And if Gazans do think that the Israelis didn't get rid of Hamas, but in fact got rid of them or tried to get rid of them, then the victory over Hamas will be a strategic disaster for Israel. So we need to destroy Hamas. I'm very hawkish on this. I'm with all the 80-90% of the Israelis on this. And therefore, we need to massively rush humanitarian aid into Gaza in a serious way. And that means we need political leadership and we need to take risks. And once in a while, we need to buck a pole. So I think Israelis are more hawkish because they don't trust the government. That's a dynamic that's hard to understand maybe from outside, but makes a lot of sense in Hebrew to Israelis. If you don't think this government is going to do the job, and as we've already seen, many people don't, you are going to have more strident views about what needs to happen. And those views aren't directed at Gazans. You're not saying, I don't want humanitarian aid to go in and I hope Gazans know that I hate them. You're saying, I don't trust Netanyahu to get the hostages out. And the more that there's a sense that there's a competent government with a strong hand on the wheel, and we have a policy going forward, and we're going to free Gaza from Hamas, that's a hashtag, but you get what I mean. The more I think Israelis will come around faster. We're already seeing them coming around because the humanitarian problem really does look real now to Israelis. But I think it'll happen much faster if there's a sense that there is a leadership. So I think that the distrust of Netanyahu is terribly hampering the war effort. Everyone's noticing how distrust of Netanyahu is hurting us in Washington or in London or in Paris. I think distrust of Netanyahu is hurting us here inside Israel. And that to me matters more.
Do you or your clients have a commercial collection matter that's going nowhere? The Sarachuk Law Firm specializes in the most challenging collection matters, whether it is a single matter or a portfolio of cases. They are based in New York with relationships around the world. Sarachuk's proprietary databases and tried and proven methods have earned them an unmatched reputation for success in getting their clients what they're owed. They work on a contingency fee basis, so they're only compensated when they succeed. The Sarachuk Law Team strongly supports Israel. You can reach the Sarachuk team at www.sarachuklawfirm.com. That's S-A-R-A-C-H-E-K lawfirm.com or at 646-403-9775. The proceeding is an attorney advertisement and past results are no guarantee of future performance.
And you can see other points of dissonance in terms of how Israelis are thinking and how it really, really conflicts with how the world and especially U.S. Jewry considers the points of the war and what should happen more specifically on the day after. And one of these points of dissonance is, of course, the idea of a two-state solution versus what we have now, which is a no solution. But our prime minister has over and over reiterated how he is the only thing that has saved Israel from a two-state solution. And of course, to American Jewry, the two-state solution is the panacea of all of this conflict.
Yeah, look, this is another place where the basic idea that many American Jews have that Netanyahu is primarily playing politics and not doing policy and leading, and there's a deep distrust of that politics, is basically shared by Israelis. If you just take a look at what Netanyahu is doing to try and fix everything we've said until now, I don't, you know, whether or not it's a criticism of him, it's something he himself knows. And Likud's political planners know. And they know that the next election, if they don't fundamentally shift public opinion, is going to be a disaster. And Netanyahu has been essentially in campaign mode for the better part of 3 months now. And it's constant. And to a lot of Israelis, the campaign itself, which is washing over Israeli public debate, is one of the sources of the distrust because the soldiers are still fighting in Gaza. So, for example, we had just now, literally today, Netanyahu, it leaked to pro-Netanyahu journalists from pro-Netanyahu news outlets that in a classified discussion in the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee of the Knesset, it's fascinating that you can have a leak from a classified discussion in the Foreign Affairs and Defense Committee of the Knesset with a verbatim quote from Netanyahu in pro-Netanyahu outlets. It has been suggested that maybe Netanyahu is the source of the leak. But the quote that was leaked, and I think it's very trustworthy, and I think people generally believe that he said it, was, if I was talking now about two states for two peoples and giving up the assault on Rafah, then I would have excellent relations with the Americans. This is when MKs were questioning him about the souring relations with the Biden administration. He then said, another prime minister would do those things, and he would win back the Americans, but he would lose for Israel the war against Hamas. That's essentially the line. 2 months ago, Netanyahu got the Likud members of Knesset into a room, and he told them, if I'm not prime minister after the war, the Biden administration and the international community are going to squeeze my successor and obviously I'm strong and my successor is weak. He's talking about Gantz, maybe Lapid. They're going to squeeze them into forcing a Palestinian state, and a Palestinian state will be a gift to Hamas for October 7, and I'm the only one who stands in the way. In other words, he's saying to the far right of Israel, where a lot of this distrust runs very deep after October 7, a lot of the blame for Netanyahu is on the far right. It's not just on the centrist parts of the coalition voting base. You might hate me, but if I fall, you have an ideological disaster on your hands, just so you know.
Shalom, dear listeners. This is Daniil Hartman.
And I'm Yossi Klein Halevi.
Together we host the podcast For Heaven's Sake from the Shalom Hartman Institute.
These have been some of the most challenging days for me personally, for Israel, and for the Jewish people. And one of the ways in which I've gotten through this is that I've found solace and meaning through discussions with my dear friend and study partner, Daniil Hartman.
And I hope that the Times of Israel listeners will join us as we continue to tackle the pressing questions facing the Jewish people here at For Heaven's Sake, which has become the number one Judaism podcast.
Well, Daniil, I'd also like to recommend the Identity Crisis podcast hosted by our colleague and friend Yehuda Kurtzer. It's a series of fantastic conversations with leading figures in Jewish life, thought, and culture.
You know, for decades, the Hartman Institute has been a preeminent destination for Jewish ideas and learning. Now you can access Hartman ideas on these chart-topping podcasts at shalomhartman.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. We're privileged to help guide you through these challenging and even unsettling times.
That's been the campaign. It's been constant. It's been intense. It made, according to the leak, member of Knesset Meir Cohen joked that we've talked more about the American enemy than the Hamas enemy. And he meant that sarcastically, according to the leak, but he was poking Netanyahu. And Netanyahu wants a campaign in which he and the Biden administration are fighting about a Palestinian state. It's a campaign that many have suggested is terribly damaging for Israel at this moment, is in the Biden administration being interpreted as a political stab in the back for Biden. He backs Israel, holds the line for Israel, pays a political cost in the Democratic Party, and all Israel can do is then have a fight over whether Palestinians get to have a future or not. Feels to the Biden, put it this way, the next Democratic president, even if it's Chuck Schumer, even if it's some pro-Israel person, that I think is a lot of what drove the kind of Schumer-esque discourse. Even the people who are very pro-Israel in the center of the Democratic Party, the centrist wing of the Democratic Party, are saying, we just can't trust the Israelis not to stab us in the back when we support them. And that's being driven by Netanyahu's politics. And so you have this politics now that have become central to the war. For 3 months, I personally refused to talk about politics. Most Israelis refused to talk about politics. Netanyahu never stopped talking about politics, never stopped politicking. That's why he's, as we've said 1,000 times, the only person who was in charge that day who hasn't taken responsibility, even when most of the public blames him. And Netanyahu, that tells us that he was, you know, essentially campaigning from day one, from October 8th. And so there's this distrust, there's this intense campaign. I don't know how Netanyahu survives this. I don't know how the Likud campaign games out a victory out of all of this. I hope they think that a year is a long time in politics. They can survive a year. They can shift things around. People will forget October 7, and and the Israeli right will genuinely perceive a direct and immediate threat of a Hamas/Fatah Palestinian state being forced down Israel's throat, and that will recreate the left-right politics of 5 years ago. That'll keep Netanyahu in power. I think that's the hope. They're certainly willing to burn every bridge in order to create that political moment. The trust isn't there, and the trust isn't there on deep right, and it isn't there in the center, and it isn't there from anywhere that Netanyahu needs to pick up votes. And so I just want to end with one thing that that Ron Dermer said. Ron Dermer, who's a very serious man. He's also a very close confidant of Netanyahu. He gave an interview to JNS, the Jewish News Service, which is a conservative outlet in the United States. Dermer told the Jewish News Service, you hear a lot of criticism in the media of Netanyahu or his coalition, but that's just a code word for criticism of Israel. This isn't just about Netanyahu or a particular coalition. I think in a sense, Dermer's right. For many people, the latching onto Netanyahu, the making Netanyahu into this boogeyman who they then want to say is the source of all evil, it's a way of escaping Hamas's responsibility for humanitarian aid crashing in Gaza constantly, Egyptian truck drivers refusing to go in because they were attacked. Well, they weren't attacked by the Israeli army, right? So it's a way to talk about Netanyahu is a way to avoid talking about other culprits. I think there's something there. The problem with Dermer saying this in a conservative American Jewish outlet is that most Israelis think it's becoming about Netanyahu. And Netanyahu is working very hard to make it about Netanyahu. And I am not sure that Netanyahu will make the decision that is best for Israel rather than the decision that is best for his campaign as the war progresses. And I'm just going to say it because most Israelis think it. And what's important for me is that our listeners know what Israelis think. I, Chaviv, have spent too much, have lost too much, have sent family members to fight in a war for too long, and know people who were hostages and who still are hostages. I have too much on the line for this to be about Netanyahu. And if Netanyahu continues down this path and continues to fail to give us serious policies in Gaza, and you know, until Netanyahu started campaigning for absolute victory in Gaza, a lot of people were absolutely convinced that Israel was absolutely implacable, and you don't need to say it because it's the only thing we all share and know from deep left to deep right. Then Netanyahu said it, and we started wondering if he's covering for something. So that distrust matters. And I have lost too much and have spent too much and I'm too tired and have worked too hard for Hamas to actually be removed from Gaza to think that Netanyahu's games are legitimate. And I can tell you from polls and I can tell you from conversations, a lot of people that I live with and talk to are right-wing voters. They share every word I'm about to say. If this becomes in Netanyahu's mind, we know it's already in Netanyahu's mind, but if Likud allows itself to be dragged in to a Netanyahu campaign in the middle of this war, that feels to most Israelis, not some, not a few, not the anti-Bibi crowd, most Israelis, like a betrayal. And that's very dangerous for Netanyahu. So overseas, are they focused too much on Netanyahu? Are they thinking that the war can't progress properly or Israel won't achieve its ends or Palestinians are suffering needlessly because of his politics? They might be thinking that overseas. The danger for Israel and the danger for the war and the danger politically for Netanyahu and also the danger for Palestinians going forward, because Israeli indecision, it will cause suffering for Palestinians. It already has some. It will cause more. The danger all around is that Israelis are beginning to think that very thing, that his politics are replacing real war policy. And so he has to turn around fast or this is going to go badly.
Chaviv, thank you so much for sharing your insights with me today.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thanks for listening to What Matters Now, our weekly podcast discussion. Please check out our daily briefing as well for daily updates. This episode was produced by The Podwaves. If you have any questions or comments about this or any other episode, please drop us an email to podcast@timesofisrael.com. Until next week, shalom.